Okay. Paper 117. Section 6. Old single column, page 1287. Okay, we have reached the apex of the closing Pentateuch. So here we are. We got the first 21 sections. We're at the middle here, the 21 sections after it. And so we all know what this has been building up to since I've been hyping it for ages now. This is a huge section. So, I think it'd be silly to try to plow through the whole massive section tonight. So, we ought to be able to have a goodly amount of time to contemplate the first half of this section and think about how it is that they decide to go about finally putting a name to what they've been, suggesting over and over and over. The mother. So let's see. Let's just jump in, and you'll see they start with a little transition from to bring together some historical religious perspective that we've been alluding to a little bit as we've been going along here. So,
quest for the supreme.
Yep.
We seek the supreme in the universes, but we find him not. He is the within and the without of all things and beings, moving in quiescence. Unrecognizable in his mystery, though distant, yet he is near. The Almighty Supreme is the form of the yet unformed, the pattern of the yet uncreated. The Supreme is your universe home, and when you find him, it will be like returning home. He is your experiential parent, and even as in the experience of human beings, so has he grown in the experience of divine parenthood. He knows you because he is creature-like as well as creator-like.
Okay. So that there's a little bit in the next paragraph too, but let's digest that. So right from the very first sentence, if you have any experience with Eastern religion, when you hear a sentence like, we seek the supreme in the universes, but we find him not, that should be highly suggestive of Hinduism. And it is, because that's what they're drawing from these quotes, is Hindu philosophy. Now the question is why? So you're starting off this section, and this is the first thing that you see that they're quoting these Hindu passages. And what are they getting at here? Now, if you think back when we talked about it in detail way back when we were talking about Brahmanism and Buddhism, one of the elements of that discussion involved what's tying in what they want to have us leverage from in terms of historical religion in moving into contemplating the supreme some more. In particular, you end up having a spectrum where you're starting with those Andite roots of Brahmanism that, obviously coming from Adam and Eve, have a universal father component in it very definitively. But the farther you go along in time, the more any sort of revelatory picture that is trying to get humans to see the top-down viewpoint starts to slowly flip around to a bottom-up viewpoint again. We all know that was the worry that that Melchizedek was, that the Melchizedek receivers had, that things were starting to get too much bogged down in the mud. And particularly as you go from Brahmanism to Buddhism, you start, let's just focus on kind of the ending phase of the phenomenon that's related to what was in the, you know, the previous section. The title of that previous section, The Oversoul of Creation. Well, you start with, in Brahmanism, sort of the real root, you know, more rooted part of Brahmanism, with Atman and Brahma. And in that twofold picture, you could say that what's being, you know, alluded to there, or that there's a vague inkling of, is your individual spirit, Atman, and the universal spirit, Brahman. And remember back in the Adjustor papers, they mentioned that in that original conception, when it still had a pretty decent notion of spirit, you know, it was close to that, to being a parallel to the Adjustor and the Father, Atman, Brahman. But you go forward a notch with this, heading towards Buddhism, and instead of thinking about that twofold as Atman, Brahman, you can think about it as Atman, Paramatman. And there, you know, instead of saying your individual spirit, the universal spirit, it's more soul, your soul, and the oversoul. And it's like, okay, so they're keying in on that here, definitely. They just had the previous section was that. See, that's why I'm going through this. See, they're wanting you to transition from the previous section into this one with this picture in mind. Now, see, you've gone from spirit to Marancha. And of course, you know, what's going to come next? It's going to really go back to very material, bottom-up viewpoint. You know, when you go that next notch and you really transition out of Brahmanism into Buddhism, because it's pretty much a, you know, a spectrum with 100 million rationalization schemes over the whole spectrum. But once you really get over into the Buddhism end of that spectrum, it all blurs, you know, because you've really let go of the personality component. You know, even Atman, Paramatman, you know, blurs together as one. You know, that even the word self is not really going to be kosher. Yeah, excuse the mixture of religions there. But, you know, like we were just talking, I think it was last week when we brought this up, that, you know, despite the aversion to a word like self that might be over there in that everything is all one sort of endpoint, you know, it's recognizing what kind of a one that you've gotten. You've gotten it by moving away really from spirit. And so when you go, you know, it really is self over there, but not the potentially immortal self of the soul. You know, it really is the material mind itself, the adjutant self, and its relationship to the Almighty. You know, so it's really, you know, mortal self and the Almighty that is where this twofold picture ends up when you go all the way over there. Well, unlike we were talking here in the last couple of weeks, now, if you totally let go of personality, you know, your choice to let you as an individuality point in infinity be a conduit through which the part of the purposing of infinity flows. You know, if you let go of that potential that the Father has given you, yeah, I mean, just, you know, the material energy issues, that mortal self, it is mortal no matter what your choices are. That mortal self is mortal. You know, it just blends back into the background. You know, and so to understand, you know, to just to see that, that how that fits in to this bigger picture. Now, this they bring in this notion, they, you know, they purposely use this quote here from in one of the Upanishads. He is the within and the without of all things and beings. You know, it's got two really nice leverage points off of it. You know, we were just talking about you know, the first source and center of all things and beings, and how we begin to understand what aspects of that, you know, got handed off to the Supreme from that infinite level. So that first source and center of all things and beings, you know, look at the nice parallel. Yeah, but now there's two components. There's, you know, he's the within and the without of all things and beings, moving and quiescent. Obviously, you know, when you're over there with the Atman Brahman, you know, basically the adjuster father picture, is an easy way to interpret that. You know, he is the within, the adjuster, and the without, you know, the father, the paradise father. But, you know, we know that we're talking about the Supreme here. They're wanting us to really begin to appreciate better how the Supreme fits into the picture. And, you know, with that oversoul issue. You know, so taking it the next step, you know, and not so much thinking that we're going down a slippery slope here into fuzzy land, you know, But to, you know, they want us to, and they purposely use that oversoul term. They wanted us to grab a hold of that and see the potential in that twofold picture to better appreciate the Supreme. And like we pointed out, the Supreme Being is in direct, you know, it's basically the downstepped expression of the Universal Father. But the Supreme Being is, you know, as a completed fact, you know, an actual fact, is an absonite fact, not a finite fact. Okay? And this is where reflecting on this, the within and the without, to not just let it be just in that father picture, but try to think of it more in the big picture, you know, where it's not just all about you. And your relationship with the Father, which is all wonderful and absolute and perfect, but there's the rest of the universe as well. And how does that all fit in? There's a pair of terms that are often used in relationship to this. For instead of within, you talk about immanence, and without, transcendence. Now, God as transcendence in comparison to God as immanence. You know, close and far away, within and without, in simplistic terms. But in more precise terms, the word immanence literally means remains within. Okay, and we've been trying to bring this out. You know, on the infinite level, you know, he freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. Okay, and the downstepped expression of that is, he, the Supreme Being, freed himself from the fetters of unqualified supremacy. Okay, he freed himself, you know, and became without. Okay, but does that leave this empty? No, there's something that remains within. The word immanence remains within. You know, remains in, you know, in literally, that within. When you talk about God as transcendence, that's he. When you talk about God as immanence, that's she. Okay. He trans, you know, has put himself in transcendent relationship to in some way, like the Supreme relative to the finite, or you know, the Universal Father relative to the infant. Yeah. The Supreme Being is God as transcendence relative to the total finite. So what is God that remains in? That's the Universal Mother, you know, that they're about to talk about specifically. in this section. So notice the sweeping transformations. If you go from, you know, where, yeah, I mean, there's the, you know, the God within of the adjuster and the God without, and that's a definitely a big part of the picture. But to see that in this bigger context, that there's a God of transcendence and a God of immanence relative to the total finite, the supreme being and the universal mother, you know, or, you know, God the Father and God the Mother. You know, but there's that slight qualification. We don't actually call the supreme being God the Father. We call him God the Supreme because it's a little bit more than just the Father. But, you know, you get the point. It's he. It's definitely he. And so now think about these little snippets of Hindu philosophy. You know, see, it's all he. You know, for obvious reasons, because, you know, we've had, you know, lots of epical revelation of God as transcendence. You know, this is the first revelation of God as immanence, you know, in a direct way. And it allows you to clear up a lot of the difficulties that the philosophers, starting back, you know, there with the, you know, with these Brahmin and these Hindu and other Eastern philosophers, in trying to sort this all out and kind of ending up just it all blurring into a mishmash because they were missing a key component to really understand it. They had the he thing, but they knew they still somehow needed a within, and they couldn't figure out any real solid logical way to do it, and so it kind of just blurred into a lot of magical mishmash. The key to keeping it solid and, you know, rigorous is the mother. That's the thing that they were missing to really understand precisely how this works. You know, there's a God in time, okay, and it's not he. You know, when you're talking about the total finite, it's she. You know, moving and quiescent, see, you know, transcendent out there, absent, you know, relative to the motion of the finite, you know, there's the quiescence. You know, so it's not just the quiescence of the word paradise when you say paradise father, you know, because really the word paradise means stasis, the static point. So the adjuster and the father have that moving and quiescent, but to bring it down, downstep that to the finite, the moving and the quiescent, the universal mother and the supreme being, unrecognizable in his mystery. Yeah, if it's just going to be his, it's going to get really mysterious. It's not going to be able to really be understandable. Though distant, yet is he near. Okay, see, just straight away, if it's all he, yeah, that's really mysterious. How can he be distant and he be near? That's because it's not the way it works. He is not near. He in time is near, and he is then she. She is near. She is God as immanence. He is God as transcendence, distant. Yeah.
This may be silly, but on that level, how does gender enter into it all?
The reason for using the gender is because we have gender as a fact that comes down from above. Don't anthropomorphize the basal aspects of male and female down here, up there. Find the truth thread that is the differential between male and female down here and follow it back up. Because that's what, there's always the core thread that comes down unmodified, really. What you sort of wrap around that in order to bring it down to lower and lower levels, you know, is level dependent. But that thread differential, you know, how many times have you heard me, you know, point out, you know, use that simple he, you know, like the universal father, you know, it's called a father or a he because he's an injection into place. He's not any sort of a womb-like phenomenon. He doesn't pervade the space of the finite. He's not ubiquitous. He's outside of the finite. You know, so he touches the whole thing simultaneously. He's omnipresent, but he's from without. It's without, not within. Okay. And that difference of injection into place as opposed to place, she is the means of place. Okay? And he is the injection into place. So, I mean, it's just the two ways that God, you know, when God frees himself, he frees himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, there's something that remains in. It's God too, not lesser, you know, equal, just as necessary to the logic of the whole picture. You can't have God engaging you if there's no place to be engaged. Yeah, that would be illogical. You know, and if all there is a place but nothing to engage you there, well, then why create the place in the first place? You know that the whole reason that you go beyond just, you know, this singular concept of the I am is because it's missing one thing in all of its infinity and, you know, totality and whatnot. And that's through relationship. You've got to have a separation, you know, and that first separating act is the part that can pull itself out, you know, so that there can be a separation and hence a relationship does. Okay? But that doesn't leave what's, you know, this portion devoid of deity. All you did is take the deity that can become a God as transcendence, you know, a without kind of deity pulled itself out. But the within type of deity stayed in, because that's the type of deity it is. Mother, father, place, direction, you know, and because of the separation, you know, if there's any engagement, it's an injection into place from without. Okay, so so that first sentence, it wanted you to think in that context and to get you to really recognize that if we're going to understand the finite, we can't do it with just the Supreme Being or the Almighty Supreme, the two previous papers. Supreme Being, the Almighty Supreme. We need another component, okay? Because we know that the Almighty Supreme is not he or she. It's just it. It's the power pattern component. And notice what they do. See with that next sentence. Again, kind of showing you the seeds of, you know, how you can have this spectrum from Brahmanism to Buddhism. The Almighty Supreme is the form of the yet unformed, the pattern of the yet uncreated. So they're trying to show you in all that philosophy, what part of it see is really tied to the Almighty Supreme? You know, we talked about this, that you can really think of the Almighty Supreme as the slowly coalescing future body of the Supreme Being. You know, the it. His body. You know, the form of the yet unformed. Who's the yet unformed? The Supreme Being. Okay? Yeah, the Almighty Supreme is the form of the yet unformed Supreme Being, and you know, like you've heard me say over and over, that's the power, the power pattern aspect of the picture, the pattern of the yet uncreated. Okay, all right. So they're just showing how easy it is to take just a couple little passages out of that Hindu philosophy. And see how it has the seeds. And they had it right there in front of them. All they had to do is just bring in the mother so that they could piece it all together and get it clear. Okay. The Supreme is your universe home right now, place. And when you find him, it will be like returning home. Okay, the place condenses into, you know, into the point person. You know, basically, and that again, that whole bit about you know, where they were trying to help us to appreciate downstepping from the infinite to the total finite with you know, in him we move, live, and live, live, move, yeah, live, move, and have our being. Okay. Now, this is, we're talking about on the total finite level. He is your experiential parent. You know, that whole last component again. See, with the creature-like and creator-like, and it's lowercase c, creator-like. Again, because when you think about that almighty supreme component, we talked last time about how much synchrony there is between all of us creatures and that coalescing almighty supreme, but also the supreme creators. When you look at the creator line here in the sevenfold, those supreme creators are involved. Their experiences are getting convolved into the almighty supreme as well. The only time when you have a capital C creator, that's when you're talking about the supreme being, and he's only functioned like that one time, because as a capital C creator, it's an absentite phenomenon, or at the very least, that foundation of the absentite that directly impinges upon the finite, so it can give rise to reflectivity and things like that, because of its direct contact with the cosmos.
As you were talking about the confusion of the Brahman, et cetera, from the top down, the ultimate point of view is a unity point of view.
Right.
And so as someone, a very sincere spiritual person, contemplates the universe, contemplates God, and gets to that point of saying, oh, it's all unity.
Right.
That's a magnificent realization,
right.
And that might be one of the reasons why it got confused, because they just fused it all.
Right, and that's definitely the case. See, just notice the catch. If you're going to take that unity viewpoint, you've got to do it in a rock solid personal way.
Okay.
Otherwise, the unity that you conceive is really a bottom up energy. Ubiquitous energy thing, see?
Yeah.
And that's what you end up with. This just melting one drop of water into the ocean sort of, thing, where, you're definitely not going to say personality, you won't say soul, and you're not even really going to allow yourself to even be a self.
Yeah.
You're just a drop of water, and here today and gone tomorrow. Yeah, and it just sucks the life out of the top-down view.
But when they wake up on the mansion world, some angel is going to say, you got the unity
right.
We'll start from there. But you're still here.
Right. Yeah, and you'll see the very next paragraph brings in that little twist that we were just talking about. Let's see. Let's look at this next paragraph here.
If you truly desire to find God, you cannot help having born in your minds the consciousness of the Supreme. As God is your divine Father, so is the Supreme your divine Mother, in whom you are nurtured throughout your lives as universe creatures. How universal is the Supreme? He is on all sides. The limitless things of creation depend on his presence for life, and none are refused.
Okay, so again, see, quoting Hindu philosophy there, none are refused, no respecter of persons. Right? But you so notice the he in there, and you begin to feel, that is really insufficient to express the truth. He is transcendence. I want something, that literally is on all sides of me, not way off so far I can't see him. How did we start out? We seek the Supreme in the universes, but we find him not. Okay? I want something that I can find. I want something that is literally imminent, touching me, surrounding me, through me. I don't want something that's around me in a horizon that I can't even see. Okay? I want God within. Yeah.
But we want something surrounding it.
Yeah, we want to be part of a loving cosmos. We don't want to just be a loving person. You know, a loved person. I mean, a loved person. Yeah, we're a loved person, and that's really cool. But I crave relationship with other loved persons, other children of an initiator. Who is in here with us? He injected, you know, our beingness into this place. Where's God that's going to bring us together? You know? That's what... And so, see, you know, conceptually, yeah, he, the supreme being, you know, as a transcendence of the absentite around the finite, he's on all sides of the finite. But when you take that all-sideness of the without and bring it within, it's not he anymore, it's she now. It's the mother. Okay? And this is it. Okay, this is the first paragraph. If you look at these five papers, you got all this verbiage. And finally, the first time the word mother is used. I mean, literally, if you look, prior to right here, there's one time the word mother appears, but it's just, you know, created mother spirit. And there's one time after right here that mother appears, creative mother spirit. You know, the phrase creative mother spirit occurs twice, once on each side of, towards the ends of this Pentateuch here. Right here in the middle, we finally have found the first time. And we're going to find other, because in these seven paragraphs, you know, this one and the next six paragraphs, the word mother is used 9 times. Okay? None, 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 none. 9 times, none, 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 none. Okay, they're trying to do exactly like I said. They're trying to create a direct representation of that individuality of the whole. The five papers give you a picture of the whole, but right dead in the center is the individuality of the whole, the mother. The word's used 9 times. Okay, in this, before we get to the bottom of this page. Okay. And so here it is at long last. For the first time, they say it point blank, not just hinting to it, where I've been using the word mother over and over and over. Here it is, right in black and white. As that infinite transcendent God is your divine father, so is the supreme your divine mother, capital M. That fundamental, personal, purposive expression of the without within is your divine mother.
It also says about the eternal mother son too, though, in the beginning.
Right, but that's on the existential level. That's, you know, a whole nother story. But you'll see, we'll touch on that in a little bit. They'll point to that tie, to that other aspect of mother.
Chris, it's just what you've been trying to describe. I just think the word describes it perfectly, in whom you are nurtured. I mean, you're describing nurturing
right. When
you're talking about here, you know, not just something far away or deep
not,
inside.
And what's the preposition of that prepositional phrase before the word whom? Is it by? It's in. Okay? When it's he, it's by. You know, you're engaged by the Father. But you're in the mother, you know. And just, you know, one little thing about Pam was just alluding to there, you know, in this hierarchy of mothers, there's a highest inness that we're in, the eternal mother's son. Okay, but that's transcendent of the total finite level. Okay, so it's pretty rarefied inness. The inness that you're in of the eternal mother's son is so removed that, you know, it, not even mind really is appropriate. You know, it's a spirit presence.
Would that be like the first pattern of motherhood from the eternal son?
Yes and no. In the direct way we're talking about it here with the Supreme, the pattern is the Trinity. Because the motherness of the Eternal Mother Son comes from the Trinity. The motherness of the Infinite Mother Spirit comes from the Trinity. Remember, this is the key thing, again, that has never existed in, with any solidity in prior philosophical thought, that the original has two sides. There's the father side of the original and the mother side of the original. The father side of the original is the first source and center. The mother side of the original is the Paradise Trinity. Okay. When we talk about that, this side of the original coming down and engaging us as a functioning phenomenon, we talk about the triunities. But when we talk about the other side of the original coming down and engaging us functionally, that's the Trinity of absoluteness, the Trinity of ultimacy, the Trinity of supremacy. Okay. And it's that that gives rise to the finite mother, the total finite mother that we're talking about here. You know, that aspect of the Supreme that is your divine mother. I mean, obviously, you know, like we've pointed out, there's this, the Almighty Supreme side of it too. But, you know, the Supreme as mother is the universal mother. You know, universal in the sense of the total finite.
So, like,
okay.
Then the Almighty Supreme would, is this right? Hmm. The Almighty Supreme would be when we've all become one with the Almighty Supreme. I mean, we've all, what's the word for it? We've all finally become perfect, and we've all completed.
No, it's in parallel. Yeah, the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme are right here at the same level. They're not in order in any sort of a sequence. There's the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme. They're right here at the same time. There's a she and there's an it that pervades the domain that we exist in. There's the power of the total finite. That's the Almighty. There is a power there, you know, that is very literally tied to these things. Okay? That progressing pattern of energy that is coalescing in the cosmos. You know, where more and more the things of the cosmos will begin to function together in a perfect pattern. They will express a purposing, but separate from the kind of purposing that we know as a personality, you know, spirit purposing. That aspect is not the Almighty. That's the Mother. Okay, the Almighty doesn't uphold you. The Almighty, from our bottom of viewpoint, is just a collection of parts. It's Swiss cheese. Okay? There's, you know, you can't stand on the plane of the Almighty. There's some of the Almighty here and some here and some here, and it's slowly coming together, and you can fall between the cracks. Yeah. But there's the God within that goes beyond the coalescing body parts of the Supreme Being. You know, there's something that you stand on. There's something that upholds you. It's not the Almighty. It's the Mother. Okay? That's the aspect, you know, when you bring the Supreme Being down, he's got a power part and a personal part. Okay?
I just had a thought that when you... the mother ministers to the person.
Yeah.
The Almighty doesn't care about the person.
No.
As we saw in Japan.
Sublimely indifferent. Especially because they're just really, you know, it's just not functioning, you know, as more than just, you know, mostly stuff yet.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't have a lot of supremacy manifested yet, where it goes from spirit through mind to matter, you know, where this matter directly reflects a dominance of spirit via personality, personality controlling matter, so that when you look at the matter, you see a direct reflection of the unity of the mother. It just looks like, you know, to that completely immature eye, it looks like the opposite. It looks like chaos. It looks like completely indifferent to our welfare and everything. It just, you know, we're going along happy and go lucky, and then squash. You know, it doesn't even know we're there, and we're crushed by it. A supernova blows up, and, you know, or whatever. I mean, it just, that is so cold and non-personal. You have to allow that, because it is so yet immature. It, that the Almighty is a, is far from being a direct reflection of the personal purposive hand. It is definitely there, but it takes time for this personal purposive hand to master the matter. And this is where to note the beginning of this. Okay, very carefully note what they say here in the beginning of this paragraph. It does not say, if you desire to find God, you cannot help having born in your minds the consciousness of the Supreme, the consciousness of this mother part. If you truly desire to find God, to distinguish between merely desiring to find God and truly desiring, what is that distinction? The distinction is bringing a recognition of the mother in. The desiring to find God, and that's, if you just say, if you desire to find God, God means God the Father. Well, yeah, and that's definitely where you start. Nothing's going to happen until you desire to find that transcendent source of all things and beings. But, you know, and I might consecrate my will to the perfect will of that God I'm going to set out seeking. But how do I transform that initial desire into a true desire? The word true means cosmic-like. Okay? I have to somehow get from point A to that transcendent point B. There's a long road there. What's the road like? What kind of tires do you need? Or whatever, you know, analogy you want to use to navigate this road, because he's, you know, beyond the gate at the end of the road. Okay, if I'm going to go along this road towards that gate, I've got to know, you know, how to do it. I've got to somehow have the kind of vehicle that conforms with the road. You know, if it's you know, deep rutted tracks, I better not take my Lamborghini, okay, because it's not going to get me very far. I better have a heavy duty, you know, Hummer or something, okay, maybe a tank, okay, because I might even need the gun, okay, okay, but you got to know what's the way to him like. How, you know, that's what to truly desire. That's when you bring that consecration of spirit down into the mind, and you make your mind like the road, because the most fundamental thing about that road is that it's an upholding surface. It's not quicksand. It's a hand of God, the God within, the God of immanence, as long as I am like her, I'm held by her, and there's nothing to fear. The only thing that can happen is it's not that I could pick the wrong, you know, thing, and she says, well, I don't like that, and, you know, and she dumps me off the road. That's not how it works. You know, there's actually no place to dump you off. She fills the whole space. Okay. The only thing that can go wrong here is if I choose to not be. Okay, God made me to start with, and as long as I am held. But I'm given free will, and I could say, well, you know, I don't like being. I will be not. Well, of course you're not upheld anymore because you're nothing. She doesn't uphold nothing. She upholds some things. And God, the Father, made you a something. And she will faithfully uphold you if you, as long as you don't throw away that divine gift of beingness. Okay? So, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
Just a question on usage.
Uh-huh.
God the Supreme,
mm-hmm.
the top-down view of deity,
mm-hmm.
Then there's the actualizing finite Supreme Being, which is what is in the present. Then there's the absolute reality of the Supreme Being.
Yeah.
Then there's the Almighty Supreme.
Yeah,
here's a question.
Yeah.
When they use the word Supreme capital S, what are they referring
to? Okay, well, yeah. What they're referring to there is that they've been basically doing this for the last little while here. As soon as they gave you that God in time thing. I mean, really technically, Supreme Being is only, as an actuality, is only absonite. If you're talking about the Supreme Being now, you're not talking about an actuality. You're just talking about... Yeah, you're talking about something that, there's the potential for it and the actualizing,
Right.
But it's, and that's why they introduce, instead of that bottom-up view of that final individual, the Supreme Being, let's get another word for that fact point. Let's go up to the top and look down. And then we, instead of calling him the individuality name, we call him by his unity name, God the Supreme. Okay? And the power of that phraseology is the definition that they gave you of God. God is personalized deity. Okay? And when you're talking about those top-down views, you have the type of deity that's being personalized right in the name. A particular flavor of deity is called the Supreme. If it just says the, capital S, Supreme, the Supreme, that's the type of deity that you're going to personalize. So it's God, the Supreme. If it's the Father type deity, when you personalize that type of deity, you have God, the Father. Okay? And the power of that in this context is, the Supreme Being himself as an individual doesn't come down into the finite. But you can think, so he doesn't come down directly personally. Like we just said, we seek and we find him not. Okay. But you can think of that deity, another way to think about it from your point of view, you're a person, but you're obviously not personalized deity. You're personalized what? You're a personalized self. You have a mindful self that has been identified by personality. You're a personalized self. And that self has the potential to be divine, even eventually, but never deity. So the difference is itself instead of deity. But that gives you another understanding of what deity is. Deity is a kind of self in this context. That person has a selfhood that's called the Supreme. And that selfhood, it's not a creature selfhood, it's a creator selfhood, okay? But it's a selfhood nonetheless. And then that selfhood is personalized. The Supreme is the self. And that it's in that context of really kind of thinking of not him influencing down here as a person, but the nature of his self imposes an influence upon the finite. And what kind of a self is that? They tell you that type of self, you can think of it as a power personality synthesis. And so if that selfhood is sort of infused, not as a any sort of a direct substance that you can get your hands on, but as a catalytic influence. If there's this catalytic influence from above, from God the Supreme, that permeates this catalytic influence is going to be motivating things toward that synthesis that it is like. Because we're trying to all eventually come get to the point where we have a nature that is like the Supreme Being so that we can have a relationship and say hi to each other. So if he is a power personality synthesis, eventually we have to become one. And so you can say, well, how does all this finite action know what the goal looks like? Wouldn't it be nice if permeating this is basically the blueprint, not the completed fact of power personality, but the blueprint for power personality synthesis, the supreme, it permeates it. Okay, so that it, and so when you really talk, you're talking about the supreme, it's his self, and so it's valid to say he when you talk about the supreme to a degree, as long as you appreciate that you're saying he because you know that that's what's really directly tied. Because when all is said and done, the total finite motherness and the total finite almightiness, merge together into the supreme being. Okay. And almighty totally is, it all is just there. It's his body. Motherness, extends on because you need mother, all the way. But finite mother has all been condensed into the supreme being. And then the place is the absentite place, and you need an absentite mother, that fills that space. But, and the supreme being is in her womb along with all of us. he was once the total womb, or she was once, but now that he's a he, he's in a womb with all of us. Okay, as seventh stage spirits. Okay, he needs to be in that mindal womb just like we do. Okay? He needs to be upheld just like we do. Okay. So anyway, so there you have it. The first Gene, time, the mother, and then Gene has a question here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm stuck on. I think of the Trinity as being non-personal or impersonal.
Yeah, it is.
Well, if motherhood or mother comes from Trinity, or down, where's the personality come from?
Right.
How is she personalized? Because it's God the mother.
But even more to the point, not so much how is she personalized, but how is she personalizable? Because the Paradise Trinity is the part of that, when you're thinking about at the infinite level, if you think about it all together and you pull out these three parts that are personalizable as the three absolute persons, and then what's left behind is the non-personalizable part, the Paradise Trinity. So see, it's even more difficult. If all that you had in the picture was just the Paradise Trinity, well, I can't make person out of it. I don't care how much you downstep it or whatever. I mean, that's non-personalizable deity. Okay, so I finally figured out and what I tried to show you an understanding of when we went through total deity. Finally, when you had got the infinite eternal ellipse and that whole picture in play, you notice, okay, there's this downstep functionality of the Trinity called the Trinity of Supremacy down in that supreme, section, that supreme level of functionality in the infinite eternal ellipse. And what does it find there? What does it meet there? It meets the infinite upholder there. That's also in that domain of deity functionality. So the functionality of the Trinity meets this extension of the Father as infinite upholder. The two come together, meet. Okay? 1 + 1 = 2. Remember? There's a superadditive consequence of every relationship. What is the relationship between the infinite upholder and the Trinity of Supremacy? It's the finite upholder. It's a downstepped expression of the infinite upholder relative to the total finite. It's a facet of deity. The infinite upholder type of deity is personalizable. And after all, see, what we were downstepping wasn't literally the Trinity. It was the functioning of the Trinity. And it functioned in relationship to the infinite upholder and created a downstepped expression, the finite upholder, a type of deity that is personalizable and has a totality attitude of the total finite. And it's personalized, in the same way you're personalized. The Father gives it personality. Okay? It's personalized deity. It's the universal mother. The finite upholder.
So it's not, is it experiencing?
It's experiential deity. Finite upholder is experiential deity. And you go, oh wow, this is my story. I understand this story because my adjuster is a pre-personal fragment that I'm given. It's personalizable. And what did we figure out? It's a fragment of the infinite upholder. The mother is a personalized phenomenon in the same way that you fusing with your adjuster are a personalized phenomenon. That infinite upholder type of stuff is personalizable, but it starts out pre-personal. And there's a individualized pre-personal thing, your adjuster, and then there's a total finite expression of it. And the difference in the way they talk about these, on the one hand, you can think of individuating, dipping a ladle into the reservoir of the infinite upholder and bringing out this little individuation called an adjuster. Or you can say, I've got the whole reservoir, and I just create a total downstepped expression of it. That's the finite upholder. Or the absentite upholder, if you want to go up to the next notch. But see, it's a downstepped expression of the total reservoir as opposed to an individuation out of the reservoir. But it's the same substance. And when you do the total, it's deity. When you do an individuation, it's not deity. Because the fundamental aspect of deity is unity. It doesn't express the whole of it. Just a portion, but it can certainly be divine. It is divine. That portion is divine. Downstep's expression of the whole is deity. You finally come into sync with that. You're a divine personality, and this is personalized. It's personalized deity. It's God. So that's the difference. Okay, but it comes about in functional relationship with the functioning of the other side of the original. It doesn't come about in the functioning of the Father side, through the triunities. It's the other hand of functionality, the functionality of that totality attitude, as opposed to the functionality of the first center. What starts with a point and expresses its pointness of being downward. Be you and an individual. It points to you because it's a point. Envision that original as an object that has a perfectly flat surface on one side and a single mound with a single peak on the other side. That's the first center side of the universal one of infinity. The other side, the perfectly flat side, is the Paradise Trinity. Okay, there's a question back here.
I didn't say anything until the very end. I had a little chat. He's probably never going to speak to me again. But that's okay. But something I got out of it, though, was the lack of femininity, the lack of woman, and the lack of family.
I mean, you'd think he is not, he is not feminine. It's not any more feminine, okay? I mean, you know, saying, well, I don't want he, let's go with it. I was like, well, okay, I'm still feeling pretty empty here. Especially when you tell me what the it is a void. Yeah, that's really not satisfying. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Post that conversation, more research this week. When you think about all the people that love Buddhism, you know, to have this experience to have tea with a gentleman was so enlightening. I'm so grateful for it. Because you think about it, you think they want that. They want that nonness, that emptiness, that life is suffering, or, you know, I'm going to shave my head and now I'm a monk. And there's just nothing going on. And then I think about how many people smoke marijuana. It's a genetically modified plant. It's cloned. It doesn't get to have sex. It's a female plant, completely deprived of a male plant. It never gets to have sex. Oh my God, don't even think about them having sex, because then we're in big trouble. You know. And I just feel like all these people are taking in this female estrogen instead of thinking about God as a woman. Or look, tells us, don't take drugs to see God.
It's just, you know, I mean, like we were just pointing out here, I mean, they're trying to get you to not think totally negatively. There's a reason why Buddhism is an ongoing phenomenon. It's not devoid of truth. It's very circumscribed. The big circumscribed aspect is where's personality here. But there's a truth there. That's why it's on an ongoing, what they're trying to say, what is that truth? What is it that they're holding on to? Yeah, there is an Almighty. Okay? Which from a personal viewpoint is void. Yeah. Now, from an energy viewpoint, it's not void. Okay? But from a personal viewpoint, it's void. And that's all, I mean, that's, you're not going to get a supreme being without the Almighty. That is a very, very important part of the whole picture. You know, and our journey, after we get to paradise and go out and start working in the super universes, we're going to be involved a lot more intimately in a lot of that aspect. But you've got to be a person first. You've got to grab a hold of personality. And you need someone, you need to grab a hold of someone to uphold you as a person. You need the father and you need the mother. You need the person without and the person within. And to sustain, it's to make you a person and to sustain you as a person. And now as a person, I will slowly over time begin to come into relationship with energy, which initially seems to be an enemy and a void. And so much so that when I see the energy within me, I want to reject it. I want to think of myself as something to be rejected. No, yourself is something to engage with your personality and bring under control.
To be integrated.
To be integrated, Okay. Maybe here first, yeah.
The process of the Supreme Being and all it does, all she does, he does for us, is it some way preparatory to being able to understand the eternal mother-son better when that time presents itself in the future?
Yeah, you'll see they're going to mention that.
Lead into that.
Let's touch that in a bit.
I just find it fascinating that, I see the Western tradition as personality laden. God the Father is the person.
Mm-hmm.
The Eastern tradition focuses on the it.
Mm-hmm.
It always has.
The energy.
And even when someone like Lao Tse introduces the concept of personhood into deity, they purge it out almost as fast as they can. If you recall in the book where it says, Lao Tse actually introduced the highest concept of God the person that was ever introduced to the Eastern tradition, and they couldn't handle it. They purged it out.
But and you saw this, I was trying to just give a quick little overview of that diffusion that occurs when unless there's an awareness to choose to hold on to the personalizing focus, it diffuses.
It diffuses.
And Brahmanism gets more and more diffuse until it becomes Buddhism, and it's totally diffuse. And you know, instead of having some notion tied to the I am, remember if you go back and read that about Brahmanism, you know, even when you get into Brahmanism, you've got an it is instead of an I am.
So even Siddhartha, mm-hmm. say, you know, he was quite an enlightened person, and no doubt he had concepts of the personhood of God.
But he left his wife and his children to find God.
Jesus even said that Buddhism was a very high concept, but it didn't quite get you into the harbor because they never introduced the fatherhood of God.
But like I just said, you know, to not think of Buddhism in a dichotomy sense. Don't reject Buddhism.
No, not at all.
Find its truths. And see how they're part of the Supreme.
Right.
Everyone has a part of the Supreme. Which part do they have? What parts don't they have? And the one thing that's really missing, if you think, well, can I just go and, you know, get all the religions and bring them together and then I'll have all the parts? No, you're going to be really missing one part. The Mother. The true Mother is not there to be collected. Why? Because of two reasons. One, this is the first epical revelation of God the Mother. This is the fifth epical revelation of God the Father. Okay. But number two is what we just read. If you truly desire, okay, we've got this. Remember, it's sad to record that so few persons are taking delight in augmenting their initial desire, their initial faith grasp from the Father, into a true desire. That's what this revelation is here for. To get us to the point where we start to have a consciousness that cannot help but have born in their minds the consciousness of the Supreme as Mother. That's the whole point. The Supreme, fully as Supreme, is a long way off, but the Mother is right now. You can start right now with that part of the Supreme. Get the Mother first. That's your first leg of your journey from here to paradise. Get the rest of it second. That's, you know, functioning as a finaliter, where you're seeking God the Supreme. Okay, let's get back and do a little bit more of the paper here. Yeah. Yeah, similar. You know, there's the cosmic mothers, there's the creative mother spirit, there's the universal mother. It's in a hierarchy of mothers, okay? But there's differences, but there's similarities you're about to see here. Just look at the next paragraph.
What Michaelis and Abaddon, the Supreme, is to the finite cosmos. His deity is the great avenue through which the love of the Father flows outward to all creation. And he is the great avenue through which finite creatures pass inward in their quest of the Father, who is love. Even thought adjusters are related to him. In original nature and divinity, they are like the Father. But when they experience the transactions of time in the universes of space, they become like the Supreme.
Okay, two things there. Michael's a he. Okay, and the Supreme Being is a he. Just as Michael is the means of transcending the local universe, we all know that to go out into the super universe domain, you've got to go through him. Okay, he is that gateway of transcendence, you know, into the greater universe. In that fullest sense, that there's the Supreme Being. We all have to go through the Supreme Being to transcend into the absonite domain. So there's a parallel. Just as you have in the total finite this gateway to the beyond, you have a downstepped expression of that, Michael. You know, no one gets to the Father except through me. No one gets to the Father, you know, in a full sense of infinite, except through the Supreme Being. Even to get to that initial recognition of the Father, you have to pass through a recognition of supremacy on the sixth circuit of Avona before you get to the third circuit and have your first recognition of the Father. Okay, and that's what they're alluding to here. You don't find the Supreme Being there, because he's not to be found yet, but you do, and if you look closely, they, you know, they point out that you recognize the requisite measure of supremacy on the sixth circuit, not the Supreme Being. Okay, so there's that. And now the difference is, let me just point out, goes beyond the immediate paragraph here, but to Jerry's question. So there's this parallel between Michael and the Supreme Being. And there's obviously a parallel, like I was pointing out, between the creative Mother Spirit and the Universal Mother. The difference is the Supreme Being downstepped into time in that personal purposive way is the Universal Mother. But it's not like you're downstepping Michael, you know, and getting the creative Mother Spirit. They're both here, side by side. So there's similarities but differences. The Universal Mother is, you know, in a temporal sense, the Universal Mother is now, and the Supreme Being is then. But here in the local universe, the Creative Mother Spirit is now, and the Creator Son is now. They're both now.
Seems like that's a nice balance.
Yeah, right.
Okay. You know, back in paragraph 2 that we just read, if you truly desire to find God, you cannot help having born in your minds the consciousness of the Supreme. I remember, and I just recently went back to them a little bit, but the Psalms, I remember doing a study of the Psalms. And, you know, they talked a lot about a nurturing God. Of course, it was all coming from God the Father, but it was, they had this, and most of them, a lot of those writers were Egyptian, the Urantia book says, and they had the understanding that they're talking about here. They truly desired to find God, and so they had the consciousness of this mother, even though they weren't calling it that. They were talking about the nurturing aspect of God. God upholds me, God, you know. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you know, you know, the richness, the road ahead, you know, I mean, those are, and it says, you know, that Psalms is some of the most beautiful, worshipful ever written on this planet.
And just, you know, as long as you brought it up, it just, again, I want to stress, you know, approach these paragraphs in a solid, logical fashion. Don't divorce sentences out of the paragraph. Or you'll have more distortion in meaning instead of less. Okay? You know, there's two consecutive sentences there. The first one says a consciousness of the Supreme, and they go, well, okay, it has nothing to do with the mother. No, look at the next sentence. What are they saying that we're talking about here in that? You know, put the two sentences together. Consciousness of the Supreme, your divine mother. Okay? You know, that's what they're trying to point out there. Not the almightiness. You're not going to get a consciousness of the almightiness of the Supreme. You're going to get a consciousness of the motherness of the Supreme. That's what they're talking about. If you truly desire, because that's the whole point. That truly is conformity of your mind with the universal harmony of God the Mother. There's no universal harmony of God the Almighty. Okay? That's, you know, if anything, you want to use a word like chaos when you look at the material world, see?
Growing pains.
Yeah, the mother is the harmony.
There has to be some, for the gentleman that, mm-hmm. that she was talking about, mm-hmm. the sincere Buddhist.
Right.
And who is finding the Almighty.
Right.
There is some satisfaction there. There is some recognition of godness. It's the itness of God in the purest sense.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's not devoid of value. The Buddhist who spends their life doing that, again, I go to the mansion worlds. You can spend your time, you know, digging ditches here or doing anything here, and whatever you do, it's only going to be a stepping stone to what happens next.
Right, and so now...
When you get there, you say, oh, okay, I got that little bit, and now I've got to get some more.
Right, and the thing that I'm trying to bring in, that's a very, very small part of this book.
Oh, yeah.
This book is about a lot more than my salvation, or my starting, and okay, you got to recognize the fifth epistle of Revelation is trying to tell us, okay, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's not like, we're talking about iniquity here. There may be a pretty limited viewpoint, but it's certainly not iniquitous. There's all kinds of value, even has survival value. Sure. He's trying not to have survival value. He can't help but have it because of grace. Okay, he's trying to completely diffuse himself, but he doesn't succeed. You have to consciously choose iniquity to actually diffuse yourself. He survives. It's not about our survival. It's about people. We need to start thinking about more than ourselves. There's a planet that needs to be an advancing civilization. It can't do it with people that have such circumscribed viewpoints. Okay, in order to move from primitive civilization to advancing, we've got to have true religion, true monogamy, prayer, and God consciousness. True God consciousness. Truly desire to find God. Okay, that advancing civilization requires that. It doesn't. You can't support advancing civilization with people who are just getting the minimal start here. When you go to a world enlightened life, you don't have people that are just in the minimal starting mode. You got people that you can't even comprehend. They're doing so much in their mortal life. They're really getting the ball rolling in their mortal life, and because of that, because they're getting the ball rolling as an individual and not putting it off to the mansion worlds. The world that they're on is more like the seventh mansion world, or even beyond. Okay, it's less and less like the first mansion world. They're starting to make this. They're starting to master matter. Okay, they're starting to manifest the individual within without. Okay.
The big picture. Mm-hmm. And so in my life, then, first I have my relationship with God.
The Father.
In my tabernacle. Right. And myself and my personality, I'm trying to, with my relationship and sharing my inner life with God, I'm, getting that spark going. And now I want to do God's will. So I can either sit and contemplate doing God's will and think about it and wish it and want it to happen. But naturally, the fruits of the Spirit are going to start spilling out when it's true.
Right.
And then that's where the balance comes in. I have something else available. And that's where, like I always say, the rubber meets the road. And I want to do the Father's will. Right. And in the doing... That's where the fruits of the spirits happen. I have relationships.
You have true relationships, successful relationships.
I have true relationships because I really, in my heart, want to do my best, as God's representative. And, it becomes very physical. And it becomes, in the moment, in time. Right. And really real. And I'm gathering these experiences and contributing to the supreme eventually, I guess.
Just
balance.
Right. Look at the next. I won't say because they're going to say it right next. Okay, look at this next sentence.
The act of the creatures choosing to do the will of the Creator is a cosmic value, and has a universe meaning, which is immediately reacted to by some unrevealed but ubiquitous force of coordination, probably the functioning of the ever-enlarging action of the Supreme Being.
Okay, a couple things. Oh, wait. One before I say that, I don't want to leave behind. I want you to notice that even, you know, that last sentence up in the previous thing, even thought adjusters are related. Okay, you know, they become like the Supreme. That's why we have in this thing, you know, if you go up the cosmic mothers, there's the infinite upholder, a fragment of which is a thought adjuster. And that's why it's at the top of this column, because once, you know, any of that comes down into time, you know, it has a relationship to the motherness of the Supreme. You know, so as soon as it starts being not just a as a virgin adjuster, it's just father-like. It's an injection into place. It's an initiator. But as soon as it has accumulated experiences, more and more, it's like the mother, and it functions in you as an internal upholding. You know, it's literally going to hold yourself. It's going to be your body. I mean, your first stage spirit. When you talk about upholding you, you're going to hang your whole self on it. Okay. So that's what they're pointing out. Okay, but then you go to this. See, the act of the creature is choosing to do the will of the Creator, not just recognizing the will and consecrating your will to that will, but actually doing. You know, doing the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. Not just the willingness, but you have to actually exhibit that. You have to do. One must do something as well as be something. And that your doing-ness is your mother-likeness. Your being-ness is your father-likeness. In order to do the will of the Creator, you have to have a mother-like character. That's what doing-ness looks like. Okay? The Father potentialized you. But you have to choose to actualize it. And what that actualization, when you actualize the Father's potential, it's mother-like. That's what it looks like. Okay? And see, this ubiquitous coordination, coordinate action, that's a mother functionality. The one word we use for that is focalizer. Right? Yes, it definitely is. And you have the Supreme Being expressed down in time. There's an action facet. The action of the Supreme Being is called the Universal Mother. Yeah. The focalizer, the coordinate action, the Mother. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And see, it's ubiquitous. It's place-like. It's not an injection into place. It's a ubiquitous force. It's place-like. It's the Mother. Okay, the next paragraph there.
The Mirantius soul of an evolving mortal is really the son of the adjuster action of the Universal Father and the child of the cosmic reaction of the Supreme Being, the Universal Mother. The mother influence dominates the human personality throughout the local universe childhood of the growing soul. The influence of the deity parents becomes more equal after the adjuster fusion and during the super-universe career. But when the creatures of time begin the traversal of the central universe of eternity, the father nature becomes increasingly manifest, attaining its height of finite manifestation upon the recognition of the universal father and the admission into the core of the finality.
Okay. This is a very, very key. This is probably, you know, the central paragraph. Okay, first thing, okay, there it is. Finally, we've got the complete thing, the Universal Mother. Okay, it's a parenthetical, comma, the Universal Mother. It's a parenthetical of what? To what end? I could misinterpret this sentence if I don't notice all the words in it. If I think that it says, the child of the Supreme Being, the Universal Mother. Then I go, well, oh, so the Universal Mother is a synonym for the Supreme Being. That's not what that sentence says. It doesn't say, it says the cosmic reaction of the Supreme Being.
Yeah.
The mother, you know, expressing that personal purposive action down into finite time, that is the Universal Mother. Okay? You take the individuality name of the total, the Supreme Being, You express it down, and what individuality name do you use for that personal purposive part, that action part, Universal Mother? Okay. There's where they get, you know, so it, you know exactly what, precisely what designation to use for that facet. You have the Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother. Those are the two aspects. And now, that next sentence should really give you pause. It should change your entire picture of your relationship to God. Because it flies in the face of everything that every religionist has ever said throughout all of time, or even imagined. The mother influence dominates the human personality throughout the local universe child of the growing soul.
Dominance.
The mother influence. Okay. I mean, your whole local universe career, they're saying, is fundamentally about the mother. So if I have no concept of the mother, I have no concept of the local universe career. I have no concept of my first countless millennia, you know, not millions of years of my ascension career, if I don't have a concept of the mother. Okay, now specifically, what is the concept? Okay, their contrast, you know, they go on and they give you all those details, okay, about the father influence and the mother influence. We've got one simple word in each case to distinguish this difference of influence. The father is the initiator. That's the father influence. The mother is the focalizer. We're not so much talking about the womb or the upholder part here. We're talking about this, you know, they told you which part, you know, the previous paragraph, they told you what part to think about, the coordination, the coordinate action, the focalizer, okay? They're contrasting focalizer, initiator. The mother is not an initiator. The father's initiator. The father is not a focalizer. The mother's the focalizer. Okay. So how does this work? Think about this. This first, what does the father give you to initiate this process? The adjuster, a fragment of the infinite. Okay, that's a pretty heavy duty first step, initiation. Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to even get your first measure of wrapping your mind around, and I mean literally, wrapping your mind around the Father's first initiation. Okay? You don't need more initiation. You got a lot to work on already. Okay? You got to try to somehow, he initiated you with a thought adjuster. How long is it going to take you to focalize, wrap your mind around that literal fact of the initiation? You know, that initiation is made fact through the adjuster. It's a literal thing that you literally have to wrap your mind around. Like I said, if you're going to leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, yourself, your mindal self, has to be wrapped completely around that adjuster. You know, if some of that mindal self is still on Marantia scaffolding over here, you can't leave the local universe. You have to literally wrap your mind around this concept, okay? You know, this fact. You have to literally wrap your mind around this fact that you've been initiated, okay? Now, obviously, when you fuse, there's going to be an intimacy there. You're probably going to start to get a little bit of secondary initiation, you know? Okay, but they're telling you it's pretty minor, okay? It starts to be a little more significant when you're actually a first-stage spirit out there in the super universe level. You know, you're getting some subsequent initiation that you got to wrap your mind around. You know, he sparks you and you wrap your mind around it. He sparks you and you wrap your mind around it. He sparks you and you wrap your mind around it. Okay? And you're chugging along through the super universe. Okay? And see, initiator, focalizer. Okay? And when I say you wrap your mind around it, well, man cannot cause growth, but he can supply favorable conditions. See, what are you actually? You're supplying the favorable conditions so that the mother can focalize you, so she can wrap your mind around the father's initiation. Okay? You can't do it on your own. You know? So you have to make yourself something that the mother can grab so that she can wrap your mind around what the father initiated. And when that's achieved, then the father will initiate some more, and you'll get your mind wrapped around that. It's really not so much that you'll wrap your mind around it, you'll get your mind wrapped around it by her, See? You know, you don't evolve, you're evolved. You don't grow, you're grown by the mother. Okay? So now think about, see, now you can really start to understand what happens when you get to Havona, what they're alluding to there. You know, when you finally get to the central universe. Remember what you have when you enter the central universe. When you enter Havona, they tell you you're perfect in only one way. You have perfection of purpose. Perfection of purpose when you enter Havona. Okay, we have a twofold consecration that we have to assume right now. I consecrate my will to the perfect will of God the Father, and I consecrate my mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. I have a twofold initial consecration. I perfect that first consecration from here to Havona. That first consecration is finitely perfect before I enter Havona. There's nothing left to do in terms of perfect, more perfectingly consecrating my will to the perfect will of the Father. I have perfectly consecrated my will before they'll let me into Havona. They're not going to let something that isn't perfectly consecrated to the will of the Father into Havona. So that consecration's done before I enter Havona. So now you really start to understand what's going to happen when you're in Havona. In Havona, there's no roadblock anymore between the Father's initiating action and you. It's perfectly linked now. You, every nanosecond, is incredible initiation. Bang, 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 bang. He's initiating you constantly from the beginning of Havona to paradise. And you are wrapping mind around, wrapping mind around, wrapping mind around. Okay? You go into this incredible geometric mode of taking that on. Okay? That first little bit of mindal development, we call the psychic circles, and we call them 7654321. Why? They tell you it's because it's like the 7654321 circles of Havona. Well, okay, well, why? This is why, okay? You know, this is a parallel to the mother track here. And what am I really doing in Havona there? Now I'm really, really doing the full mother acquirement. I am acquiring the mother, the fullness of the mother that can only be acquired, the nature of the mother, the divinity of the mother, that can only be acquired when I've completed that consecration of will. Okay, and this initiation, it reaches its peak when I get to. So the Father has completely initiated, and I've responded by supplying the favorable conditions, and the mother has created, within me a form like her. That's why when I go out as a finaliter, I'm a revelation of God the Mother. Because the Father has initiated a full actualization of that nature within me. Okay? So I go out in a new mode. I'm not in a mode anymore where I'm in this intense spark, 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 spark from the Father. He's got me fully initiated now once I leave paradise. And now I'm starting on that second leg of my journey. That's what they're pointing out here. Okay, let's get some more in.
In and through the experience of finaliter attainment, the experiential mother qualities of the ascending self become tremendously affected by contact and infusion with the spirit presence of the eternal Son and the mind presence of the infinite spirit. Then throughout the realms of finaliter activity in the grand universe, there appears a new awakening of the latent mother potential of the Supreme, a new realization of experiential meanings, and a new synthesis of experiential values of the entire ascension career. It appears that this realization of self will continue in the universe careers of the six stage finaliters until the mother inheritance of the Supreme attains to finite synchrony with the adjuster inheritance of the Father. This intriguing period of grand universe function represents the continuing adult career of the ascendant and perfected mortal.
So they're talking about that second leg that I've been referring to. And notice the first thing they mention is what I mentioned to you. See, you get there. Now that you have this this complete father-initiated, mother-acquired character, mother-like nature, it comes into a whole new relationship with the Eternal Son as the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Spirit as the Infinite Mother Spirit. That's what they're pointing out there. And because of that, touching upon the remember that we pointed out those the motherness of those two. They start as existential, and then experience is added to that. That motherness is on the absolute level, but it's experiential existential deity. Whereas God, the absolute, the other way around, that's existential experiential. There you have the full absolute level experiential with existential tacked onto it. So you're coming in, you're touching upon the highest mother, sort of the mother that's the reciprocal of the mother you're engaging now. That's the difference of the Eternal Mother Son. It's the absolute from the other side. It's not like you go all the way we're going in a relationship to the mother and then you get to the Eternal Son. You have to go past that around to the other side. You have to go past eternity and beyond infinity and back, back. So the Eternal Mother Son is this reciprocal type of mother relationship. But they're telling you it sparks you anew. It repotentializes you so that you now have a new potential that you're going to head out of as a six-stage spirit to actualize. And what is it? They're talking about you're seeking God the Supreme. You were seeking God the Father. Now you're seeking God the Supreme as you head out from paradise. And you're an experiential being, so you're acquiring something. Well, I acquired relationship to God the Mother. Now I'm going to acquire that relationship with God the Supreme in that second leg. I'm going to start to really bring in that Almighty Supreme part, combine that. Combine the Almighty with the Mother that I possess, bring it together, and become a finite, very small, finite, manifestation of the Supreme, progressively as a six-stage spirit, seeking more and more of a relationship with God the Supreme. Okay.
Question.
Yep. Is there a question?
Yes, and at that point, that's when we are beginning on the very edge of understanding God the ultimate, as we're completing God the Supreme, the understanding of God the Supreme, and the eventualization of that being. We're on the cusp of understanding.
Right, God you're beginning. The right, you're in that kind of that beginning point, like the Master Son is. Once the Creator Son achieves Master Son status, he starts this second leg of his journey. We start that second leg of the well, and both of us are moving towards that absonite, from different angles. We have an inkling of the ultimate that's different than the inkling of the ultimate that he has, but we both are converging on the same point.
Upon the completion of the sixth stage of existence and the entrance upon the seventh and final stage of spirit status, there will probably ensue the advancing ages of enriching experience, ripening wisdom, and divinity realization. In the nature of the finality, this will probably equal the completed attainment of the mind struggle for spirit self-realization. The completion of the coordination of the ascendant man nature with the divine adjuster nature within the limits of finite possibilities. Such a magnificent universe self thus becomes the eternal finality son of the Paradise Father, as well as the eternal universe child of the Mother Supreme, a universe self-qualified to represent both the Father and Mother of universes and personalities in any activity or undertaking pertaining to the finite administration of created, creating, or evolving things and beings.
Okay. A lot of that's pretty direct, but we got more mother, or more the word mother. Notice how they said, you could think of it in pure parallel designations. You have the Almighty Supreme and the Mother Supreme. Those would be very parallel ways of talking about the two aspects. The reason I always use the Universal Mother rather than the Mother Supreme is I want to really stress, especially like if in a context like this, I want to stress the hierarchy of mothers. I don't want to bring in the rest of the Supreme. I want to just focus on God the Mother, and how God the Mother manifests through that Supreme level as the Universal Mother. Universal, the total finite mother. But, it's certainly there as a way of understanding, and very parallel. The Mother Supreme, the Almighty Supreme. And again, see, you're going to be qualified to represent the mother. Okay. And notice how they're building here. They're in these last two paragraphs, they're wanting to really get you to think about that seventh stage spirit state. So you go on and on and on as a finality functioning as a six-stage spirit, and then finally the grand universe is settled in light and life, and via the Supreme we're all going to transcend the finite. Remember we talked about this, a fragment. We have to all be given a fragment of, that will transcend us. They were given this new fragment that upsteps us from a six-stage to a seventh-stage spirit. Okay, and that's important because that, then you can understand the difference in the terminology between this paragraph and the next one. In this paragraph, it said, child of the Mother Supreme. Look at the next paragraph.
All soul-evolving humans are literally the evolutionary sons of God, the Father, and God, the Mother, the Supreme Being. But until such time as mortal man becomes soul conscious of his divine heritage, this assurance of deity kinship must be faith realized. Human life experience is the cosmic cocoon in which the universe endowments of the Supreme Being and the universe presence of the Universal Father, none of which are personalities, are evolving the Maranchus soul of time and the human divine finality character of universe destiny and eternal service.
Okay, the last little bit first, the parenthetical there, none of which are personalities. We're hearkening back to the Maranchus soul of an evolving mortal is really the son of the adjuster action of the Universal Father and the child of the cosmic reaction of the Supreme Being, the Universal Mother. Okay, where the soul comes from. It's this, the adjuster and the agitant mind coming together and making Maranchus substance, the material fibers, energy fibers, and the spirit energy fibers. Okay, that mindal, the universe endowments of the Supreme Being, literally the mindal energy, and the action of the adjuster, either which are personalities, are coming together to make the Supreme. I mean, to make the soul. Okay, but now that first sentence. All soul evolving humans are literally the evolutionary sons, okay, they purposely, you're using the word son here, not child. Up above, they say, okay, right now you think of your son of the father, child of the mother. But if you take it to that seven-stage spirit point, where you get this fragment, just like the father gave you a fragment and made the truth of your sonship fact, so that you are in fact a son, literally, you have his substance in him, so you are a son of the Universal Father because of that adjuster fragment. You'll be a son of the Supreme Being because of this fragment you receive. Okay? So they're trying to combine these two together to get you to think about this relationship between the he-ness and the she-ness, the childness and the sonness, okay, of the relationship there. We've got that one point where we want to say God the Mother, in parallel with God the Father, just like they said Mother, Father, and Mother up above in the previous paragraph. Okay, but the reason they stick that little parenthetical in is not because the Supreme Being He is a mother, but it's, you know, again, what type of a parenthetical is it? It's a clarification parenthetical that, okay, technically you're a son of the Supreme Being. You're a child of the Mother. See, technically. That's why that little clarifying parenthetical is in there. And I mentioned this. You've got to always, when you get a parenthetical like that, you've got to figure out which kind it is. Is it saying, here's a synonym, or here's a clarification? It's like what we just said, it's not totally literally precise. You know, it's trying to give you the truth, but don't lose sight of the fact. Okay, is it that type of parenthetical? Or is it saying, is it literally giving you a synonym? Like it did, with the Universal Mother, where it's the cosmic reaction of the Supreme Being. Okay, yeah, the cosmic reaction, the being down in the cosmos, that's the Universal Mother. Okay. So comparing those two, parentheticals, you have this difference. And you have got to recognize which kind of parenthetical they're using, or it's going to be more distortion of meaning rather than less. They don't spoon feed this to you. They don't hold your hand and say, now don't confuse. We're not using that kind of parenthetical. They just never do that. They just give you a parenthetical and they're challenging you to engage it truthfully. Okay. But if you just take a very simple-minded view, so you can easily confuse all this, and the whole mother-father thing is going to get all blurred together again, and you got to keep it separate. The key is to notice that it said that you were sons, you're only son of the Supreme Being, the He. Yeah?
I keep thinking, why do they only talk about the mother in this one section?
Yeah. And just in this one part of this one section, these seven paragraphs.
Yeah. And, it's like if you can't get into the house, you're never going to see her. she's kind of that way,
Yep.
It's just like she's protected. But in our minds, so we don't get a distorted view, Yep. We want to, if you've gotten this far, we're going to reveal the mother. We're going to reveal what we see. And what can be most helpful to you. But if you can't even get this far, God the Father is fine for you.
Yeah. And you'll see, we're going to stop here tonight. But you'll see what they do next week when we finish this section.
Well, I can't do those two paragraphs.
No. That's the majesty.
Bummer.
I know, that's the majesty we're going to get to next time.
Read it before bed tonight.
Yeah, you're allowed to read on your own.
I know.
But
she has nobody to ask questions to, right?
But if you do read that, you'll notice, boom, we're right back with a powerful father passage. It's related to what you're just saying. It's for he who has ears to hear, here it is, the truth of the mother, right in the center of the whole. There couldn't be more arrows and neon signs. Like I said, there's not the word mother nary a place, except right here, okay? These seven paragraphs. And either you're not ready and you'll go right through those seven paragraphs because they're only seven little paragraphs and you move on. Especially you'll get to here and say, I understand what they're talking about. I understand this father stuff, these next two paragraphs. That's fine. But if you're ready to notice, here it is. This is the truth of the mother. Now take this truth in these seven paragraphs and spread it out through the whole book. And the whole book will become new. Or at least it will begin to become new. I tell you, when you first really kind of get it, it'll seem like you're reading a whole new book. Because you'll start to do what we've been doing. You'll start to notice that in the entire book, there's these two phrases or two clauses connected by an and. And you'll recognize the two sides. There's an initiator side and a focalizer side, Or there's an initiator side and an upholder side. There's a father side and a mother side. over and over and over and over and over. Because little did you know, the mother influence dominates the human personality throughout the local universe childhood of the growing soul. Little has man recognized. But this is the great truth. The whole first thing is about trying to get enough mother-likeness in place to even have a semblance of a beginning engagement to this incredible father-like initiation that you've gotten at age six. Okay? That's your first big task. Don't ask for more father initiation. Okay, you've got more than you can handle right now. Consecrate, you know, to doing what he's initiated. See if you can actually live what he's potentialized. Don't just recognize his love. Do his love. Manifest loving service. Do it. Don't say, if only I had more initiation. Okay, you have infinite initiation. Okay? Do it. This is the fifth epical revelation. Civilization needs us doing this, not just potentialized to do it. Okay? I mean, and that's why it's so important to not pass through these seven paragraphs anymore. It's high time that we recognize these seven paragraphs. Nine times the word mother appears, okay? Now see the mother everywhere, okay? And see the real purpose of the fifth epical revelation, okay? It's the fourth epical revelation gave you what you need to transform you as an individual, okay? But now God is asking more. God is asking you now to be a part of the solution to the world's problems, not just someone who's not fearful anymore and maybe thinks that they're saved. Okay?
Although there's nothing wrong with it.
He wants you to do something as well as be something. Okay? And that's why he gave us this revelation. Okay? I mean, if you wanted more initiation, then the thought adjuster, how about 2,000 pages of really, really difficult stuff to wrap your mind around? You want to talk about something that's going to take some mother-likeness? Here it is. Okay? So that's, it's just so critical to begin to recognize this. Let us all recognize this and transform our relationship with this book. Okay? I know that I'm absolutely loved. I don't question that anymore. I want to do something with that now. I want to know how to make science true. I want to know how to make government true. I want to know how to make my relationship with my spouse true. True monogamy, okay? Monogamy is an it, okay? I want my relationship to be she-like. I want it to be true, okay? Et cetera, et cetera. I want my religion to be true. I want it to have mother-likeness, you know? That's what true means. Okay, that's what this is all about. So, we'll attempt to do that, even as we, you know, as we start up next time and reading these powerful soaring passages to start off. We will notice some things in there that we might not have noticed before with our father eyes. We'll see more of it there. All right, let's take a moment here.